Welcome to Energy Stew. This is Peter Roth, your host. I want to ask you if you believe in science. Well, do you believe in the old science, which is a problem for many of us because there's a lot we can't believe in anymore because there's been so much politics and biased nature around it and even corruption in scientific experiments. And there's a lot that we can't trust in the world. We're being introduced to new sciences all the time, like GMOs. How can we trust it all? So we have to move into a new science that we can trust better and really believe in. And to help us do that is a return guest. We had a wonderful show recently, and I've asked him to come back again. He's the author of Brave New Mind, Living in a Future Science World. That's for us. I want to welcome back Elliot Maynard. Welcome.
Thank you, Peter. I appreciate you having me back again.
Oh, sure. Your book is so full of opportunity, of delving into future science in many ways that really don't often relate to old science much at all. And I'm very excited about so many of the items in your book because you delve into so many applications of science in the world that we need for the future and the potential of it all, too. So you have a brave new mind because you're braving all kinds of new speculations, really, about where this science can take us, the quantum reality that we are learning to live with. And so I want to talk more in this show about particulars of different sciences and different opportunities that are out there that we can all grasp and maybe believe in the future better. And you have a lot of scientific background. And some of it has to do with aqua science. Maybe that's one way of saying it. Can you tell us about that?
Yes. I was actually in graduate school in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, at a new oceanographic university called Nova University. It was new at that time. And I got together with a retired naval intelligence captain and started one of the very first giant freshwater shrimp farming operations in the United States. And we started this down in South Florida and got together with the Seminole Indians and opened up some drainage canals out in the middle of the Everglades. And we raised we were some of the first ones to raise the local giant freshwater shrimp, which was pretty well unknown at that time. Then we imported the stock from Asia, which is now a major food source of the world. We were trying to find a new way to feed the world, and we were fairly successful, although stocking baby shrimp into the Everglades was fraught with many unexpected predators who appeared, like small alligators and snakes and et cetera, and water birds especially. Strangely, because of the uniqueness of this project, I was featured on the front page of the Miami Herald, standing in the water out in the middle of the Everglades, harvesting some of the shrimp that we tried to grow out there. So we went on, and I've done aquaculture is a very efficient way of producing food, and if you use recycled water, you save water and energy, and you can bring the food source using abandoned factory buildings. You can create this right in urban centers. So it has wonderful potential that way. You can control the food and the environment of the animal in these systems so you have a pure end product if consumers demand this kind of thing.
Well, I think they would if they knew about it, if they knew that they could. And that's what's important about your book is that you give us an education into what is out there and available if we can grasp it and work towards it in society. And so there needs to be much more momentum building
This book was generated. It's the second one that I've written on global ecology. The first one was called Transforming the Global Biosphere, 12 Futuristic Strategies. The latest book, Brave New Mind, brings all of these kinds of things into the future. And essentially, I had a great frustration. The more information I got, the more I could really see the real reality show, and I encourage others to stand back and take this kind of objective viewpoint of humans and all that we get so wrapped up in the drama du jour or the debacle du jour. Instead of focusing on those things, I like to focus on the positive things we can do, and also emphasize the fact that it begins with one person. We now have an amazing alchemic phenomenon called the internet, and we can use this to throw seeds out globally, and these go to the most unexpected places, as you know, very often.
Well, there's so many people out there hungry for this information, and yet there are so many people who have been brainwashed through propaganda. And certainly there are a lot of classicists out there who don't want to hear about any of this.
So it's a big world. in the past, history has shown this too, that no matter on one end of the scale, you have the brave ones, the warriors, so to speak, who are not afraid to take that step in bringing the future into the present, which is what this book is all about, and how to interface with this wonderful information field that's been around, but formerly was reserved for the use of adepts and special people who had to kind of keep their talents hidden if they were healers or did something that was out of the ordinary, especially within the church. And there were many talented, gifted people there who did wonderful work, as we know.
Well, even so, now there are government organizations that are witch hunting.
Absolutely. And I very recently have uncovered a rather astounding fact that in the around 1700-1800, in that period, people in the United States who had come here were isolated. They had farms. They were trying to clear land and establish a home here. And during that time period, the fact that giant skeletons had been uncovered, were being uncovered in the United States and also other parts of the world, was so common that people talked about it. They didn't have any cultural restrictions, these folks. So they were just curious.
And we're talking about giant.
The wonderful thing that drives scientists.
And we're talking about giant skeletons.
Yes, maybe
15 feet tall.
Yes, these they ranged essentially from about over 6 feet to some of them 18 and 20 feet tall. And this evidence, because of the kind of attitudes we had of the archaeological establishment, there was also the whole business of creationism, and it became politically something that no one wanted to talk about public. So the Smithsonian Institution and others just suppressed a lot of this information. It's all out there for anyone who wants to look at it now. It's amazing.
Right, and there are photographs of it, too.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, there's a history. There's so much that has been kept secret to society just to control it. And opportunities that we have moving forward, where there are sciences that are already known, but they've been suppressed.
Yes, and it's ruined the careers of several throughout history, a number of them that were brave enough or dumb enough to stick their heads up and say, hey, you know, the foxes are running the hen house here, and the truth is the truth, and why shouldn't the public have this in their education systems, which we don't. Well, now. It's and surprising. What a different world it would be if we had this new perspective.
Right, and it's not easy. For instance, all the politics around vaccines, and the suppression of information from other countries about vaccines, and court cases and evidence, and yet we're not allowed to know any of that here.
No, that's true, and I guess it's what we must call part of the human condition, and part of the human condition means that on one end of the scale you have the brave ones that are willing to step into the future, and a whole fairly large chunk of society likes to remain couched in their indifference. They celebrate their indifference, and as the Simon and Garfunkel song goes, couched in their indifference. Indifference like shells along the shore.
They don't know how indifferent they are. You know, they might be indifferent, but they don't realize how blindsided they've become.
Absolutely, and this is why you see all these extreme shows on television which continually try to outdo each other with the most gory kind of spectacles you can imagine, because the general sensitivity of this group has been raised so high that it takes something really heavy to shock them. Now, sadly, if they don't wake up, they're going to be confronted with natural disasters that have happened and will happen periodically to the Earth. And we will all need to get together and figure ways to use our not only our hard technology, but our consciousness technology to help these situations.
Well, that's the point, is that we can keep on inventing all kinds of new things. And slowly they are seeping into our lives publicly, but not fast enough. And so we also need to shift consciousness.
Yes, absolutely. That's the key.
Right. And how do we do that? What is happening? And, for instance, in your book, you talk about that.
Yes.
You talk about music science.
I'm sorry, about what?
Music science.
Yes, absolutely. Music, actually, one of the 25 keys to enlightenment, if you will, or wisdom that I present in the book, which outlines a whole new operating system for humans to move into the future, involves the consciousness, and the key is a tipping point in the critical mass of people. It has been very well proven, for instance, the power of prayer to heal people who knew nothing about this experiment taking place. It's outlined in the book. And the most important thing that was found, that when you have a relatively small proportion of people praying or meditating, and especially if they're trained to improve their skills, this has blossomed into a new way to change things instantly within the quantum field. And it's already been proven out, and it's mentioned in the book again, that John Hagelin, for instance, has created, he's a physicist and head of the Maharishi University in Illinois, and he has created something called invincible defense technology. And this is based on a very relatively small proportion of people who are trained in meditation to focus on creating peace, reducing conflict, and they've statistically validated this. In Ecuador, there are special groups of troops, military people, that are trained in this. So that's a really good start. Other countries are watching and starting to use this technique also.
Well, also coming back to consciousness and harmonic resonances that we need to live in to reach those higher realms of consciousness, we are living in a world where the music has been corrupted through operating at that higher hertz frequency than we should be listening to. That happened during World War II, and there's a particular pitch that music needs to be at. It's a slightly lower that is more calming and harmonious. And so most music that people hear is at a pitch level that's designed to excite and disturb people.
Yes, that's a very good point, because One of the best examples are the military marches. You think about this. They whip up people's energy, their so-called patriotism, and at many cases for the purpose of the powers that be. And music can soothe the spirit, as is well known, and probably the best examples are when you use this in conjunction with growing plants, agriculture, and this has been done by many people. Some of the new marijuana farmers in the places where they're legalized are playing Mozart and Beethoven to their plants, because you can hook up a set of electrodes, like essentially a lie detector, to plants and prove that they respond to different people in different ways. And this was done quite a few years ago by a man who worked for the FBI. I can't remember his name offhand.
Right. He wrote a book called The Secret Life of Plants.
Yes, that's a good one. That one is by Peter Tompkins, or Thompson, I think. Yes, mm-hmm. That's a very good book, and it's been around for maybe 20 years, I think.
Longer than that, actually.
Yeah.
and so this is what we need to look at, this resonance that we live within, whether we're hearing music that enhances our spirits or not, and environments that do. That's why feng shui is so important. And so we need to learn how to be in phase with a higher consciousness. And you talk about that in the book a lot, about people and conditions to create that.
Yes, this is a very profound and very simple methodology, and it's perhaps a shattering glimpse of the obvious, how powerful music can be. And even where people don't have sophisticated musical instruments, the more so-called primitive societies use drums and musical instruments they can construct to create rhythms, and in doing so, they create standing waves, such as the Hopi dances. I actually had the opportunity to work with the Hopis on the reservation and have attended these. They set up a standing columnar wave and can actually bring in rain clouds. I've seen this happen on a perfectly clear day. Living in resonance with our environment is so important to helping us stabilize ourselves in the face of the tremendous bombardment of electronics. These are relatively new kinds of music, but they interfere with our normal human functions. And the only way we can kind of retune ourselves is to leave the cell phone, at least in the car, and go down to the beach and wiggle our toes in the sand, or get in the dirt in the garden with your hands.
Right. We need to be more conscious of connection. And that's what shamanism is about. And shamans use drums to move into that state. And they also are honoring, let's call her Pachamama, Mother Earth. And so it's really that consciousness of being present and integrated and alive with everything around us.
Well, you know, it's funny. I've traveled to many different parts of the world and spent time with indigenous people. I always like to do that. And sometimes you just sit there with the people and you don't really talk. You might share some food or beverage. And another shattering glimpse of the obvious, if you want, is that these people are so tuned and imbued in doing these things in their relation to nature, they don't talk about it, because it's like us breathing, or a fish trying to talk about water, or us trying to talk about air. It's so natural that they say, well, what are you talking about, you know?
Right. And yet we need to talk about it, because we need to keep reminding ourselves of this connection. And so your book is full of opportunities of understanding how we can move into the future because of the opportunities of shifting consciousness, of believing in the unbelievable.
Yes, and again, I probably mentioned this before, but I tell people that this so-called quantum information field is right here, right now, and nearly everyone has experienced this in certain times of their life, especially when we play music or listen to music or go to a wonderful concert where what is created is a coherent group of listeners plus the musicians. And this is a wonderful experience in terms of uplifting the human consciousness. And it's a miracle of our times that we now have the internet at such a technological level that we can create a new and enlightened, perhaps, consciousness and make a few little steps ahead with one of these shows, because what we're doing is creating a resonant field that you listeners can tune into the parts that you're comfortable with, and at least look at the parts you're not comfortable with and flick that switch, instead of not believing anything you can't prove to be true, which is the old traditional way. You simply open your mind to the possibilities and then start to observe, as you mentioned, the learning process, consciously interacting with this field. The great masters of the past, most of them were not doing this consciously. They just kind of let it happen when they had visions, or people like Leonardo da Vinci, for instance.
Right. And so what we want to do is raise our frequencies. And as we raise our frequencies, we're more in tune with this quantum field. And we can reach
into it. Absolutely. And then the next question our listeners would ask is, okay, how do I do this? You know, I'm in a little town here and this and that. And if people are living in a rural environment that still has some forest, and or they can get to these kinds of places, I love to go diving, because this is one of the best ways to immerse yourself in a different environment and get rid of all that electronic smog effects that we're so bombarded with every day. Even in our car, we're riding essentially in a computer.
Right. Well, actually, that reminds me that there is a machine that I helped to build up in Massachusetts called the Light Field Machine.
Uh-huh.
And it's for enhancing consciousness.
Yes, and there are many, many consciousness-enhancing, consciousness-magnifying devices on the market, hundreds of them, and
right.
And many of them are very good. It just requires a little bit of training and focus, and we have this wonderful technology, our hard technology, to go with our consciousness technology, and we just all need to take the time to do a little meditation, reflection on our lives, and especially within a natural environment, listening to some birds, trying to communicate with them in a nice way.
Right. And there's clarity that comes from these higher vibes that make it easier to become a brave new mind.
Absolutely. That's the wonderful thing about it. If you simply open yourself, as I suggested, to taking the next step and watching your learning process and realizing when you are beginning to operate in this quantum field, you will see that very strange, statistically impossible things will begin to happen, often in very small ways. So the key, as you suggested, is conscious co-creation. In other words, getting in tune with positive energies rather than dwelling in the debacle du jour mentality of media, whose main drive is to be successful and make money. I mean, their companies are that way, and that's just the way it is.
One of the things I teach, because I have my school, Heart River Center,
yeah,
and I teach intuitive development. And one thing that I recommend is that the students download onto their computer a tone of the alpha frequency.
And
just have it playing in the background, just so they can live more, and their brain will attune to the alpha state, which is a higher consciousness.
Absolutely, and I can see this kind of technology, for instance, put into cars and airplanes. For one example, there's no reason why cell phones have to damage the electromagnetic emanations from the brain and interfere with them. There are all kinds of studies showing tumors, et cetera, et cetera. Why couldn't we design a cell phone that puts out healing vibrations? And already someone has done this in a sense that there was a number you could call for a while and get a free trial. I think you'd get three of these trials where you would tune in. You would get a tone and put the cell phone on the part of your body that was affected. Hey, that's a good start. Maybe they could do that with cell phone towers too.
Sure, that's a great idea. And that's why people should be reading your book too, and your previous book, The 12 Strategies for Transforming the Biosphere, because you inspire the desire to really alter our realities through higher thinking and understand the potentials, because you talk about so many of the potentials that we can reach, being able to access the quantum field and to attune more with scalar waves and be and feel one. This is oneness. So it's this is a very spiritual show. So a scientific spiritual show. So Elliot Maynard, the author of Brave New Mind, Living in a Future Science World. What fun it is to talk with you, and I'm sure you're just really loving to be in this world that you write about.
Well, a big payoff is that I've come to the conclusion that humans have a natural tendency to become addicted to one thing or another, music, but that's a good thing to become addicted to if you keep yourself open and moving, not get stuck in an old paradigm. And this means that there's no greater joy than, first of all, beginning to experience a little bliss in your life, at moments at first. And when this happens, realize that, wow, you know, if every person could experience that kind of feeling for even a few seconds to start off, it's very addicting. And why not get addicted to something that is uplifting and also can be shared with others to help them? Because that's the other thing. You've got to, when you have a gift, there is a compulsion, a bit probably like being pregnant, that you need to share this with others so they can develop it in their own way, these ideas.
But one thing I was just thinking was that raising our consciousness also brings us out of our own emotional quandaries. So we don't get lost in so much in our limitation, but get to express our larger selves. And how could people find you on the net?
Our foundation website has the links to purchasing the book. The book is available on Amazon.com, both in ebook and paper format. Our website is ArcosCielos, the name of our foundation, ArcosCielos.com.
That's wonderful. So, Elliot, it's been so great talking with you again. I hope we get to meet up sometime soon. Maybe you'll be in New York City. And thanks so much for being a guest on Energy Stew.
Well, thank you so much, Peter. I appreciate you having me back again.
Sure.
It's been a delight.
Thank you. And this is Peter Roth, your host of Energy Stew at PRN.FM. I can be reached at peter@heartriver, heartriver.org, or 212-222-7748. I'd love to hear from you, and thank you so much for listening.